Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on hyperinflation when we come back. Well, here's an interesting statement. It says, "And then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men." That's in Acts 5, verse 29. You know, that's a revolutionary concept. You mean obey God rather than men? But it's impossible to put into practice unless you know the law. Now, can you imagine yourself actually telling a policeman or a judge that the law of God supersedes the law of the state? Well, there are actually three authorities that support Peter's position in Acts 5, verse 29. The first authority is our Constitution at the First Amendment. That's number one. The second is our Congress with Public Law 97-280. And the third authority is the United States Supreme Court in a case called Seeger versus United States. Now, do you know the scriptural law to cite in support of your position on, let's say, the census or public schools, Social Security, vaccinations, or the many other laws of the scripture that conflict with the law of the state? And do you know how to look them up or to research them out or to code plead the law, to use the scripture to defend yourself against state and federal incursion into your constitutionally protected rights? Because if you don't know the law of the scripture, and you don't know the law of the state, then you're in no position whatsoever to challenge either. So if you're tired of being a biblical illiterate with the police and public officials kicking sand in your face, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package right now? It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. And remember, our Mosaic Law School is available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're talking about hyperinflation. Hyperinflation is what transpires after you go through the ordinary inflation. Now, Americans have been going through ordinary inflation since 1930. Inflation took off right after we started our Federal Reserve Bank in 1913, so that by 1930, we had more paper dollars in circulation than we had gold to back those dollars up or to buy each and every one of them. So we had to have a devaluation. And that devaluation occurred June 5th, 1933, when we moved the price of gold from $20.67 an ounce to $35 an ounce, which said to everybody that we owe money to, "It's true, I owe you $100, and I should give you 5 ounces of gold. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to revalue my gold over on my end at $35 an ounce, so I'm only going to pay you about 3 ounces of gold." Can you follow that? It's called a devaluation. Governments do that all the time. And it's a form of theft. We contract for $100 or 100 hours of labor or a certain amount. But then when we get into the contract, one side or the other reneges. Either I'm not going to deliver what I said or I'm not going to pay what I agreed to. You know, one or the other. Now, it used to be in the Bible, that is, the God of Abraham, requires that what proceeds out of your mouth can't return again, and that once you tell somebody something, you've got to perform on it. You know, your word has to be good. Well, our government's word wasn't very good. It wasn't very good then. It's not very good now. And so what we're being promised, you know, you people on Social Security are being promised a certain amount, but it's being changed all the time. And it's very subtle in the way that they change it. I mentioned this to you in the last program. You see, you know that prices are going up. So the government comes along and they say, well, the inflation rate is 3.4%, so we're going to give you a 3.4% rate, a rate of increase. They lied to you. The truth is the inflation rate is 10.9%. They told you it was 3.4%, so they're stealing 7.5% from you. It's a theft. It's a tax. You wage earners out there, you've got the same problem. Your wages are going up about 3% a year, and your inflation's going up at 10.9% a year. You've got the same theft of about 7.5% per year. So you can just chalk that up to a tax. You know, if the government raised your tax 7.5% and stopped printing so much money, you'd be the same place. What it boils down to is that you can't have it. You can work for it, you can create it, you can produce it, but you can't have it, and the government's going to take it away from you. So over in Zimbabwe, the old Rhodesia over there, here's what the government's doing to those people, and we can expect that that's what our government is going to do to us. You know, if you want to learn from history, you just watch, well, what do these other governments do? How did they do that in the past? And then when it comes up, we can just about bank on that's what they're going to do to us in the future. So from August the 21st, old notes will no longer be legal tender. So Zimbabweans are rushing to spend their cash or deposit it in a bank. But in typically iron-fisted fashion, President Robert Mugabe's regime is treating people carrying cash like they're criminals. Yeah, and we do that in the United States today. Walk into the airport and put $3,000 cash on the counter, someone will buy a ticket, and you'll be arrested immediately, right away. No doubt about it. If you don't believe me, take your credit card, run down to the bank, and take $3,000 in cash and run out to the airport to buy your ticket, put cash on the counter. I guarantee you, you'll be arrested. It wasn't that way in America in times past, but it's that way in America today. And it's that way in Rhodesia. And it's going to be that way only with a vengeance when this thing turns turtle. So be prepared for it. So it tells us that one thing we don't want is official government cash. Whatever it is that we've got, we don't want the cash, do we? Now, the police at roadblocks, border posts, and airports are searching bags to see that no one is carrying more than $100 million in Zimbabwean dollars. That's about 88 pounds. That's about, 88 times, a buck and a half, maybe 150 bucks. Huge stashes of cash are being seized, particularly from rural peasants bringing their money to the cities to deposit in the banks. More than 3,200 Zimbabweans have been arrested at roadblocks, and $700 billion in Rhodesian dollars have been confiscated, according to the state media. Hundreds of businesses are also under investigation. What's that tell you about having Federal Reserve notes, huh? Get rid of them. In a macabre twist, mourners transporting their dead to funerals are forced to open the coffins to prove that they're not smuggling illegal sums of cash along with the remains of their loved ones. At Harare Airport this week, police seized several large containers that held more than a trillion Zimbabwean dollars, and the money was being smuggled back into the country by three large financial institutions, according to the state-owned Herald, to be exchanged for the new currency. Rampant inflation has rendered the once proud Zimbabwe dollar nearly worthless. Supermarket shoppers must push a trolley full of currency to buy a trolley full of basic groceries. Calculators cash registers and checkbooks fail to cope with the number of knots needed as prices for daily goods run into the millions. Houses and cars cost billions, and company budgets are in the trillions. Taking off three zeros will take the Zimbabwean currency and make it easier to handle, but only until inflation adds those zeros right back on. At the official rate of exchange, $250,000 in Zimbabwean dollars is worth one U.S. dollar. But realistically, the Zim dollar is worth even less because no dollars are available at the official rate. So on the illegal but thriving parallel, this is called the free market. It takes 600,000 Zimbabwean dollars to buy one U.S. dollar. Our Zim dollar is useless, said Ida Mendoza, a Herrera factory worker. It costs 600,000 Zimbabwean dollars to take a bus to work. We pay millions to buy a bit to eat. This striking off of the zeros is not going to change anything, and we all know that. It'll be easier to carry money around, but it's not going to stop inflation, and it's not going to make shortages of food and fuel disappear. Okay? So here's a problem that you have with food and fuel and the other necessities. The guy that buys the gasoline and puts it in the tank, he goes down, he buys it with Zimbabwean dollars, which are inflating at 1,000% a year. So, you know, just getting it down to where U.S. people can understand this, at $3 a gallon gasoline. The guy in the gas station over there, he's buying the gasoline for about $2.50 a gallon, and he's probably making about 50 cents. Let's just say he's making 4 bits. But the price of gasoline is going up at the rate of 50 cents a gallon every week. And he's trying to calculate the price increases that he has to continually charge day by day over a month or two that it takes him to empty his tanks because, you know, in a month or two when he goes to buy gasoline again, it isn't going to cost him $2.50. It's going to be costing him $3.50 or $4 or $4.50. And he's going to be having to sell that gas, you know, for not $3, but maybe $5 or $6 a gallon. And it becomes a real chore for a businessman to calculate into the future what his costs of doing business are going to be. So to make sure that he's not shorting himself, he's going to add to that. And so everybody in the supply chain adds to that. And if they don't think that they can add to it and calculate what the prices are going to be next month, they don't buy and they let it slide, and then you end up with shortages. Shortages in food end up in famine. Shortages in gasoline means that you can't get anywhere. So get ready for it. It's coming. That's why I suggest that you have a supply of food and fuel on hand that you've bought in advance. The physical goods are better. I delivered a short talk to the Ozark County Garden Club recently on the profitability of investing in food, because you see, food is going up at the rate of 10% a year. And most people think of food as being a perishable and that you can't stock food. You know, our government and our companies, you know, they've been putting these expiration dates, you know, on canned goods and various other food products. And the other day, an interesting thing happened. My little girl came home with 10 cans of cat food that she got from the neighbor lady. And I said, well, why do you have those 10 cans of cat food? And she said, well, Mary didn't want them because they're out of date, and she didn't want to feed her cat something that's out of date. Oh, geez. You know, when I was a kid growing up, they didn't put any dates on it. So we didn't know whether it was 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, or 10 years old by the time we bought it. And it really didn't make any difference because canned cat food or canned food doesn't gain or lose any of its food value. So it just kind of goes to show you that while food prices are going up, I pointed out to the garden club that we've discovered ships that were sunk for 2,000 years in the Mediterranean Ocean with vinegar, olive oil, and grains sealed in vessels, you know, sealed in jars. And if the salt water didn't get into them, they're still good 2,000 years later. And the grain has been taken out of the pyramids and sprouted and grown and eaten, and honey has been taken out of the pyramids 3,000-4,000 years old and still good to eat. Now, I find it hard to believe that you can take honey 4,000 years old and eat it out of the pyramids, but you can't eat it a year old out of the grocery store. Somehow or another, that doesn't add up to me. But then, I'm not here to tell you people what to eat, but I am here to tell you that there's coming a time when there are going to be massive food shortages because of this hyperinflation. And historically, that's where hyperinflation takes you. It takes you to famine. Famine. Now, not famine for everybody. Everybody didn't die in Bolivia just because they had a hyperinflation, but some people did. And throughout history, not everybody dies because there's an inflation or because there's a famine, but a lot of people do. And it could happen to you unless you are smart enough to take some kind of evasive action and prepare for it. And I think you'd be better served if you were prepared for it than if it took you completely unawares and totally by surprise. Now, going back to Zimbabwe, the currency switch over highlights the severity of the Zimbabwe continuing economic collapse. In 8 years, the country's gross domestic product has declined by more than 40%. An unprecedented contraction by a country not at war, according to the World Bank. Other economic indicators are equally dire. Unemployment is estimated at 70 to 80%. Agricultural production has dropped 60%, and factories are operating at less than 20% of capacity. Okay. Now picture that. It's coming to the United States. Your unemployment will be 70 to 80%. Your industrial production will be less than 20% of capacity, and agricultural production will drop by 60%. Well, agricultural production will still be running at 40%, and you can rest assured that George Bush, George Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld will be eating off of the 40% of the agricultural production that is still in operation. But you and I and the rest of the blue-collar people may not be eating off of the 60% that is not being produced. Therefore, it may behoove you to have some food stocks on hand to carry you through a 4-year period of time. Now, notice the period of time here. 8 years. Over 8 years, this has been brought on in Zimbabwe. And it's not over yet, and it's getting worse. It could well be, boys and girls, that you need more than 4 years, but I would suggest 4 years as a bare minimum. Sabotage. The result of the economic collapse in Zimbabwe, once one of Africa's most prosperous economies, is impoverished and hungry. 10 years ago, about 30% of Zimbabwe's population lived below the international poverty line. Now more than 70% do. And Mr. Mugabe maintains that the economic decline has been caused by sabotage and sanctions by Western countries opposed to his seizures of white-owned farms. Ordinary Zimbabweans and economists alike blame Mr. Mugabe's chaotic economic policies, which deny open access to foreign currency, support bloated state corporations with huge deficits, and force banks and pension funds to invest in government bonds at negative rates. Zimbabwe's budget, according to a new supplement presented to Parliament by the Finance Minister, Herbert Marura, on July the 27th, is running a deficit of 24% of the gross domestic product. And the government is paying for its profligacy by printing money. And it became too expensive to print standard currency 2 years ago, so the government began producing cheaper bearer checks, which are printed on only one side and have an unsettling resemblance to monopoly money. The urban rich and the cross-border traders are busy finding ways to avoid being caught by the remuneration. Many fear that it is the rural poor who will be left holding the bag of unusable Zim dollars at the August 21st deadline. The poor and the poorly educated will be hurt the most, said John Mukumbi, a Zimbabwean political science lecturer. They're being treated like economic saboteurs. Their money is being seized if they travel with more than $100 million in Zimbabwe terms, and yet they often have school fees to pay of $300 million. Now, these are supposed to be Mr. Mugabe's strongest supporters, and yet they will bitterly remember the day that the government confiscated their cash. There are growing fears that there will be riots over the currency change. Mugabe's fiercest opposition is the economy. He can rig elections, he can control the press, but he cannot rig the economy. The economy refuses to obey his orders. Hyperinflation is usually the aftermath of war, and Germany famously went through hyperinflation in 1923 when prices rose by 325 million% on average. Prices quadrupled every month. By 1923, the highest denomination note was 100 trillion marks, and $1 was equal to 1 trillion marks. People were being paid several times a day and were seen carrying their cash in wheelbarrows. Despite the notoriety of the Weimar Republic's hyperinflation, Hungary saw prices rise even faster. Between August of 1945 and July of 1946, prices rose at the rate of more than 19,000% a month, or 19% a day, but these figures still do not adequately reflect the extreme rates experienced by Germany and Hungary at some points during that period. In October of 1923, German prices rose by 41% a day. In July 1946, Hungarian prices more than tripled every day. China also suffered a bout of hyperinflation in 1948 and 49, after the government had spent years printing money to pay for the Civil War. Currency reform replaced the yuan by gold yuan in 1948 at an exchange rate of 1 gold yuan to 3 million yuan in less than a year. The highest denomination was 10 million gold yuan. The biggest note issued by a regional bank was 6 billion yuan by Xinjiang Provincial Bank in 1949. Much later, Argentina went through hyperinflation from 1985 to 1991, by which time the annual rate was 1,345%. In 1991, the government pegged the peso to the U.S. dollar, and inflation dropped to 7.5% annually by 1993. And finally, Yugoslavia, or what's left of it, endured the second highest hyperinflation between October 1, 1993 and January 24, 1995. Prices increased by 5 quadrillion percent. That's 5 million trillion percent. The average daily rate of inflation was nearly 100%. That means that prices were doubling every day. Now, what that means to you, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife down on Main Street, is that if you had your retirement, you know, in your 501k, and you've got $50,000, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, let's say, in your retirement account, and you go into hyperinflation, in just a few weeks, your $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 of retirement that you're expecting to live on for the next 10, 20, or 30 years is wiped out. And at the end of 3 months, it might buy a loaf of bread. $500,000 might buy a loaf of bread. Listen, tuition in Zimbabwe is $3 million, and they'll confiscate the money from you if they catch you carrying more than $1 million. This thing of government confiscation is common. It went on in Russia. It went on in China. It's been on and off all over the world. Every time these governments go through this hyperinflation nonsense, it happened here in the United States in 1783. That was the last time we had hyperinflation in this country. It's coming again, so get ready for it. Now, I can't prevent it. I can't stop it. I can't advance it. I can't do anything about it. Neither can you. But I can sit here and read the papers, and I can sit here and get my calculator out, and I can do the numbers, I can read the articles. And a good place for you to start reading some articles on inflation and what it's doing to us and what your government is doing on a week-by-week basis is called the Mogambo Guru newsletter. Mogambo Guru. And it's free. And you can download it off of kitco.com every Wednesday. Kitco, KITCO.com, every Wednesday. You're looking for the Mogambo Guru, Richard Dottie's newsletter. And every week he writes a very humorous newsletter, and he's the CEO of an investment company. And he's not a lightweight. He's no dummy. And he writes it out, and he says that in every newsletter, he says, "We are freaking doomed. We are freaking doomed." Well, he's right. You know, the economy is doomed. There's no going back. Now, there's no paying off the debts. There's no going back to 1955. And there's going to be some very massive changes in the ownership of houses and businesses and cars and chattels and stocks and bonds and everything that you can imagine. Some people are going to make money. Some people are going to lose money. Some people are going to die from it. Some people are going to starve to death from it. That's just the way life is. You want to be one of the guys that doesn't die from it, doesn't starve from it. You want to be one of the guys that makes money from it. Now, I hate to sit here and say I intend to make money off of your misery, but you know, you made this decision, boys and girls. Not me. And so when you make the decision, you got to live with it. That's the way life is. Now, here's an article on hyperinflation. I'll get started on it here. The economics of hyperinflation is inflation is out of control. Hyperinflation is when inflation gets out of control. It's a condition in which prices increase rapidly as a currency loses its value. There's no precise definition of hyperinflation that is universally accepted. One simple definition requires a monthly inflation rate of 50% or more. In informal usage, the term is often applied to much lower rates. The definition used by most economists is an inflationary cycle without any tendency toward equilibrium. It's a vicious cycle which is created in which more and more inflation is created with each iteration of the cycle. And although there's a great deal of debate about the root causes of hyperinflation, it becomes visible when there is an unchecked increase in the money supply or drastic debasement of coinage, and is often associated with wars or their aftermath, economic depressions, and political or social upheavals. So, we're looking at the characteristics, the root causes, the 1920s German inflation, the four models of hyperinflation, five hyperinflation and the currency, hyperinflation around the world, and we'll take a look at those when we come back from our break. Hang on, there's more to come. Well, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, the first half, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.com. georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network, or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember georgegordon.org is our website. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us here at the law school direct, 417-273-4967. All right, let's take a look at this thing called hyperinflation and see if we can't get some facts and figures to put together. There's an old adage that says that he who fails to learn from history is bound to repeat its mistakes. Hyperinflation has been around for at least 200 or 300 years. I can remember the very first hyperinflation that I studied was the hyperinflation of the old continental currency, which collapsed in 1783. John Adams, our second president, said that the Congress was printing currency, printing money as plenty as oak leaves. Now, where I live, here in the Ozarks, there's a lot of oak trees, and there's a lot of oak leaves. And if they were printing money as plenty as oak leaves, let me tell you, there were plenty of them. And they lose their value. In America today, the savings rate is now at minus 1.5%. It makes all the sense in the world. My God, inflation's running 10% a year. Anybody that puts $100 in the bank loses $11 in purchasing power in 1 year. Well, why would anybody in his right mind want to put his money in the bank? So they're not. They're spending it. And Americans are out on a spending spree. And as fast as the goods come in from China, we rush out and we are buying those goods. Now, it could well be that what most of Americans are doing is preparing for the economic collapse. Well, then let's be very intelligent about what we're doing, because Americans seem to be buying a lot of television sets, and they seem to be buying automobiles and buying these things on time. Now, if unemployment goes to 70 or 80%, which is where it is today in Zimbabwe, that means that only about 20 or 30% of people are going to be working. That means that about 70 or 80% of us are going to be unemployed. And if we're unemployed, we won't be bringing in paychecks. And if we're not bringing in paychecks, how are we going to make the payments on these big screen TVs and on these homes and these automobiles? Now, kids, when you don't make your payments, the Ford Motor Finance Company comes over and takes the car back. And the bank puts your house up for sale on the courthouse steps, and they repossess the house. This makes you carless and homeless. Now, doesn't your common sense tell you that you'd be better served to get out of debt so that these important toys, your car and your home, aren't taken away from you? Now, I know a lot of people say to me, well, you know, it's all right for you to talk. You know, you probably got your house free and clear, but I'm still making payments on mine. Well, let me tell you a little story here. many of you people have a tremendous amount of asset that you're not paying attention to. I was talking to an old buddy of mine last night, and he happens to own a house in Boise, Idaho, free and clear. And I said to him, I said, Frank, that house you got there in Boise will probably bring $100,000. You could sell that house in Boise for $100,000 and move here to Ozark County and buy a bigger, better house for the same amount of money. In fact, it's been shown in San Francisco, you people that live there in the city, as they call it out there, the city, San Francisco, your houses are worth $650,000. You could sell your $650,000 house, move to Austin, Texas, or Jacksonville, California, buy the same size house for $150,000. So if you got $150,000 equity in your house in California, you can sell it, move to Austin or Jacksonville, Florida, buy the same size house, and instead of having a $400,000 or $500,000 mortgage on the house, you can own your house free and clear. So Frank said, well, I got my family here and I don't want to move. Well, that's fine. Stay right there. But you better be prepared for the worst case scenario, because if you're prepared for the worst case scenario and it doesn't happen, you haven't lost anything. If the worst case scenario occurs and you're not prepared for it, you lose everything you got. So, you know, it's a choice that you've got to make. And you're making the choice, whether you do it consciously or unconsciously. If you make no choice at all, that's a choice. And there will be consequences that come from it. As an old man, I can tell you that it's better to be prepared for an event that doesn't transpire than to be unprepared for an event that transpires, that takes you by surprise. Now, I might have an extra 3 or 4 cans of tuna fish up on the shelf, and if nothing happens, I can feed the tuna fish, even if it goes bad, to the cats. But if I don't have the tuna fish on the shelf and things go bad, I won't even have bad tuna fish to eat myself, let alone feed the cats. Now, tuck it away in your heart. In 1956, Philip Kagan wrote Monetary Dynamics of Hyperinflation, generally regarded as the first serious study of hyperinflation and its effects. And in it, he defined hyperinflation as a monthly inflation rate of at least 50%, that is, prices doubling every 51 days. International Accounting Standard 29 describes 4 signs that an economy may be in hyperinflation. First of all, the general population prefers to keep its wealth in non-monetary assets or in a relatively stable foreign currency. Amounts of local currency held are immediately invested to maintain purchasing power. We Americans are already in stage one. As an illustration, Americans who now have a negative savings rate. They are buying all of the toys that they can buy as soon as they can, and that's why 71% of our gross domestic product, the GDP, is now consumer spending, up from 64% to 71%. People, when they get money, they want to convert it to something that's tangible. Good thinking, boys and girls, good thinking. Now, are you going to be able to hang on to these toys? Have you got a place to put them? And have you got a way to hang on to them? Let me give you an illustration. In 1865, the Civil War ended. The carpetbaggers and the Union Army occupied Virginia. They took over the Virginia legislature, and one of their first acts was to double the property taxes in the state. In 1866, they doubled the property tax a second time. In 1867, they doubled the property tax again. If you were paying $100 property tax in 1865, they doubled it to $2. In 1866, they doubled it to $400. And in 1867, they doubled it to $800. So your taxes went from $1 to $800 in 36 months. Take your property tax today on your property. If that happens to you, have you got the cash to pay it? See how simple that is? You've either got it or you don't. Now, I think that gold and silver are fairly good, and I think that gold and silver will continually go up with the rate of inflation. They always have in the past, they are now, and I suspect they will in the future. Now, I'm going to have taxes to pay in the future, and so I'm figuring that my county officials are not going to rein in spending. They can't control the rate of inflation. And when the price of gasoline went from a buck and a half to $3, they had to raise taxes in the county to pay the extra buck and a half for the gas. I suspect that when the price of gasoline goes from $3 to $6 a gallon, and from $6 to $12, and $12 to $24 a gallon, that they will have to continually raise taxes. So as the price of goods and services goes up, the county is going to have to respond by raising taxes. So I expect my taxes to double from this year's level, and then next year double again, and then the next year double again, and perhaps even a fourth time double again. So I said, I'll be prepared for four doublings. That's geometric progression. You can't carry it on forever, but you can do it four times at the bottom end. Make sure that you have enough gold to pay your property taxes four times over. Now, if you've got monthly payments on your house, and your house, let's say, is costing you $1,000 a month, and you've got an adjustable rate mortgage on your house, and the prices and everything go up, you know, 50% a month, they're going to double every 51 days. Boys and girls, that means that your house payments are going to double to $2,000, to $4,000, to $8,000, to $16,000, to $32,000 a month. And if you don't have a job, then you're not going to have any way in the world of making those kind of payments. So the logical solution is unload your house today and get into something that you can afford free and clear. And if you say today, oh my God, I'd have to take a big loss on my house, well, you should have sold it a year or two ago. And then if you say, well, gee, Gordon, how come you didn't put this program on a year or two ago? I did. It's in the archives. I've been talking about this for years. Now, if you've got a house that's worth $600,000, you discount it to $5,000, let somebody else take the old maid, take your equity out and buy something you can afford. You'd be better off to own a bungalow free and clear than a mansion with a mortgage on it, because the mansion's going to be taken away from you. The bungalow you can probably keep. Second, the general population regards monetary amounts not in terms of the local currency, but in terms of a relatively stable foreign currency. That's what I do. I value everything in gold, in ounces of gold. Prices may be quoted in that currency. And according to a Newsweek magazine article in Turkey in the late 1990s, people used the United States dollar as a reference point, although that country suffered only chronic inflation. So we are now suffering chronic inflation in the United States. And now we have to value our dollars based upon some other means, and we're using gold here in the United States, the price of gold, to value goods and services. And most of us that are in the conservative viewpoint of economics don't hold dollars. I don't have any dollars. I've got cows and sheep and dogs and horses and things, but I don't have any dollars. I try to avoid dollars like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Third, sales and purchases on credit take place at prices that compensate for the expected loss of purchasing power during the credit period, even if the period is short. Well, of course, you know, if you came to me and said, hey, listen, I want to buy this from you, and I want to buy it from you over a period of a year, I'd have to add at least 12% to the price in order for me to break even at the end of 1 year. If I sold you a cow today for $1,000, you'd only be paying me $900 for the cow at this time next year. So if I won $1,000 from my cow, I got to price her at $1,100 at least, $1,200 to be safe, so that by the time you finish making your payments, $100 a month for 12 months, I got $1,200 instead of $1,000 because the prices next year are going to be $100 or $200 higher than they are this year. So yes, sir, we're practicing 1, 2, and 3. Now remember, the International Accounting Standard number 29 describes four signs that an economy may be in hyperinflation. So far we've got 1, 2, and 3. We're already doing that here in America. Number 4. Interest rates, wages, and prices are linked to a price index, and the cumulative inflation rate over 3 years approaches or exceeds 100%. We're not there yet. We're headed there, but we're not there yet. Now, you people on Social Security are being indexed. Pretty soon, the labor unions will start going to their employers and saying, hey, we got to have things indexed. And once this indexing takes place, it'll be the equivalent of wage and price controls. And then the government will come in and they'll put on wage and price controls. They did it in World War I. They did it in World War II. They did it in Korea, and they're going to do it again. And every time you do this, every time government interferes in the economy, it screws it up. The only problem that they're having down in Zimbabwe is government interference in the marketplace. And everywhere that the government interferes in the marketplace, you have poverty. They tried it with the 5-year plans in Russia and China under communism, and it always failed, and it always brought poverty. And when those two countries, Russia and China, got back to the free market economy and got off their 5-year plans, those two economies took off like rockets. The two fastest growing economies in the world are Russia and China. They're practicing free market principles of economics, and their economies are just flaming like a rocket. We Americans are adopting communism. We have adopted communism, and we've got these 5-year plans. We've got a program. Our farmers are on these 5-year plans with agriculture legislation. You know, they're constantly putting out farm bills, and the farmers are getting poorer and poorer. Can't figure out what in the hell's going wrong. Well, as soon as you get off the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto and go back to the 10 Commandments, your economy will take off like a rocket. Meanwhile, back on the farm, don't hold your breath until that happens. It'll be a cold day in hell when Washington or your state capitol releases the constraints of OSHA, the EPA, and all of these restrictions and restraints that have been placed upon us. Now, rates of inflation of several 100% per month are often seen, and extreme examples include Germany in the early 1920s, when the rate of inflation hit 3.25 times 10 to the 6th power percent per month. Prices double every 49 hours. And in Greece, during its occupation by German troops from 1941 to 44, the inflation rate was 8.55 times 10 to the 9th power percent per month. Prices double every 28 hours. The most severe known incident of inflation was in Hungary after World War II at 4.19 times 10 to the 16th percent per month. Prices double every 15 hours. And more recently, Yugoslavia suffered 5 times 10 to the 15th power percent inflation per month. Prices double every 16 hours. Between October 1st, 1993, and the 24th of January, 1994. That's when that inflation occurred. Doubled. Your prices were doubling every 16 hours. Other more moderate examples include other Eastern European countries such as Ukraine in the period of economic transition in the early 1990s, in Latin American countries such as Bolivia and Peru in 1985 and 1988 to 1990, in Mexico from 1982 to 1988, in Argentina in 1989, in Brazil in 1990, and in the African nation of Zimbabwe in 2006. Hyperinflation in Mexico eventually forced prices so high that in 1993, Carlos Salinas de Gortari had to replace the peso with the Nuevo Peso, and the parity was 1 for 1,000. In short, he stripped 3 zeros from the peso. Now, this takes us up to the root causes of hyperinflation. It doesn't happen accidentally. It's happened in the past. We're in the process of bringing it upon us here in America. I have no doubt but what the political process and the powers that be are going to bring it to pass here in America. I guess we could avoid it, but the pill that we're going to have to take to avoid it is going to choke us. And I don't think Americans are in any mood or have a mind to take the kind of deflation, to take the kind of medicine that we would have to take in order to avoid this. It kind of reminds me of the time that I was supposed to mow the grass, make my bed, and wash the dishes and take out the garbage, and I hadn't done any of the above. So at 4 o'clock I started, and I figured that between 4 and 6 o'clock, when I expected my dad to come home, that I could have those four things done. And I made one pass around the front yard with the lawnmower, and my dad came home early at about 4 o'clock. One pass. And he went in the house. And he was mad when he walked up the walk, because my dad used to keep his hand in his pocket. And in the old days, those old-timers used to carry a lot of silver coin in their pocket. So he might have 5 or 10 silver dollars in his pocket at any given time. And when he had his hands in his pocket, he would be fiddling with those silver dollars. You know, I'd have some 50-cent pieces and dimes and quarters in there too, but, you know, he'd be fiddling with them silver dollars, and you could hear him go clink, clink, clink. And then when he got agitated and when he got excited, they would go clink, 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 clink. And then when he really got ticked off, they'd go off like a Geiger counter, like clink, 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 clink. And by God, when he was walking up that walk, it sounded like a Geiger counter. I was on the other side of the yard. I never looked at him. I could see him out of the side of my eyeballs because I was 12 years old, you know, and I had good peripheral vision. I could see him. He walking slow. His pockets was going off like a Geiger counter. And I thought, when he gets in the house, when he gets in the house, he is going to explode. He's going to be out here in the front yard, and he's going to beat me to death right here in broad daylight, in full public view of everybody driving up and down 8th Street in Eureka, California. And I was amazed that when he went in the house and closed the door that he didn't come back out. So I finished mowing the grass, and then I went in the back door and took out the garbage, and then I snuck into the kitchen and I washed the dishes, and then went around to the side door, came in, made my bed. When I got everything done by about 6 o'clock or so, I came strolling through the living room, and he laying on the couch reading the paper. This is in the days, you know, before that television. He's reading the paper, see? And he said, "Hey, boy, come here." Called me boy. And I said, "Yes, sir." And I came over, and he had a little talking to do. And so he talked to me. He wasn't happy. He wasn't happy. But I avoided the disaster. The fact that I was out there and I was doing my chores, and I was doing it late, but I was at least doing it, saved my bacon. Now, there are causes, you know, there's a cause and effect relationship, and my old daddy there was suffering from the cause, which was just kids' damn laziness. And so we got hyperinflation, and there's a cause to this hyperinflation, and then there's a result that comes from it. And it might be just time for you to get off your dead you-know-what and start hustling. Hustle. And you might still be able to avoid most of the penalty if you get busy. Now, hyperinflation is generally associated with paper money because the means to increasing the money supply with paper money is the simplest. Add more zeros to the plates and print or even stamp old notes with new numbers, and it also is the most dramatic. There have been numerous episodes of hyperinflation, followed by a return to hard money. Let's underline that one. Followed by a return to hard money. It kind of reminds me of the doc, you know, Doc Nielsen. I had pneumonia. And then the old doc, he's collecting $5 a week from me. In fact, I think it was, $5 a week giving me a shot of penicillin. And I was smoking a pack of Camel Studs every day, and the pneumonia wasn't going away. And the old doc, he didn't tell me what the solution to the problem was. That was old Joe Toasty told me that. And so the American public does not know what the cause of inflation is, and I'm not really sure that they're even concerned about it. So I thought I'd just come along like old Joe Toasty and tell you. You know, this inflation over here is eating your lunch, and it's been eating your lunch for the last 75 years. Don't you think that instead of being robbed, that maybe it's time for you to start looking out for yourself? And so I went over to the doctor there, and he kept giving me them shots, and then I quit smoking for 3 days, and all of a sudden the symptoms went away, and I quit going back told Doc Nielsen there, and I stopped paying him that $5 a week for that penicillin shot. That was back in 55. 50 years ago. Back in 55. So I thought I'd pass that one along to you. You know, you could get off this hyperinflation. You could get off this inflation kick if you put your mind to it. But to do that, you got to practice the Ten Commandments. And I know for most of you people out there, that's a bitter pill to swallow, and that ain't about to happen. So it's okay. Don't get angry with me now. But when this thing comes to pass, I want you to remember this program on hyperinflation. You know, it isn't that nobody ever said anything to you. It ain't that nobody told you what to be watching out for. It isn't that you couldn't have taken evasive action up front. And America could have taken evasive action at several points in our history, back in the Eisenhower years. Then we had another opportunity back in the Reagan years. And in both cases, we decided, no, we don't want to take that pill. And so now you're up to the Bush years, and now you're on the verge of hyperinflation. Now the pill's getting bigger, and it's getting nastier, and it's getting more worser every time we take a look at that pill. And I don't think we're going to take it in 2006. Now, I'm not a prophet, so I can't tell you that 2007, 2008, or 2009 is the magic date any more than I know when old dad's coming home. But I do know this. When old dad comes home, the shoe's going to drop, and when the drop comes, it's going to hurt real bad. So don't forget where you heard it first. It's going to hurt real bad when old dad comes home. So maybe before the old man pulls up to the curb, we better get busy and do something intelligent as rapidly as possible to see how much of our bacon we can save, which will come next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review as we talk about hyperinflation and the inevitable end result. So let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, and we're heard worldwide 7 days a week over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And if you'd like more information, then go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.